You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
CBC News has learned that right behind the garbage dumpster that you just saw, there are these three freezer units, and inside those freezer units are 28 bodies. And what's happening in Newfoundland and Labrador is that more and more people are not claiming the bodies of their loved ones when they pass away because they just can't afford the costs of cremation and funerals.
That's a clip from a recent CBC News story by Anthony Germain. It illustrates the grim result of a harrowing scenario. What happens when a significant portion of the population can't afford the costs associated with the death of a loved one? This is an extreme example, but it's not uncommon for people to be floored at the expenses incurred when a partner or a parent dies. In these cases, emotional distress is compounded by financial distress. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. You are listening to In This Economy, where we help you understand the systems that create your money problems from birth to death and everything in between. When we first started working on this episode, we weren't responding to a specific listener email or a voicemail. It's just that our team heard that awful news story from Newfoundland, and we couldn't stop thinking about it. It's an uncomfortable topic to think about, even less comfortable to talk about. But we wanted to explore it because it's something we're all going to have to face sooner or hopefully later. And as if to prove that point, just a few days ago, as we were putting the finishing touches on this episode, we received an email from a listener we're calling Cheryl. Cheryl told us a devastating story about losing her mother at the same time as her father was diagnosed with a rapidly advancing form of dementia.
A huge snag. Dad was Mom's executor, and while she had a valid will at the time of her death, no provisions had been made for a future situation in which Dad might be incapacitated. After an extended, grueling period of trying to help our mother with end-of-life care while she remained in a publicly funded Catholic hospital with an outdated philosophy, and keeping tabs on Dad, who was in acute care 200 kilometers away from Mom, my sister and I were utterly exhausted and sought help from a funeral home. They're not bad people, but it certainly is a buyer beware situation, and we had no fight left in us. Jordan, I wonder if there's a way for us to rethink what a funeral needs to be, and how we can avoid paying what feels like exorbitant fees for so many things, or how we can avoid paying for too many things, period.
So today, we are turning to someone who is trying to help people do just that, and have those uncomfortable conversations. Aaron Burry is the co-founder of Willful, which is a digital estate planning app. Her stated mission is to make estate planning more accessible and affordable, to get rid of those surprises. Aaron, have you heard the story out of Newfoundland about, unfortunately, bodies piling up in freezers outside of a morgue because apparently some people are really struggling to afford the cost of burying their loved ones?
I have heard that, and obviously it sounds shocking, but as we're going to get into today, it's a huge barrier, so it ultimately doesn't surprise me that folks are having challenges, paying the bills for, helping honor their loved ones.
For those of us who have been, I guess, lucky enough not to have to coordinate burial, estate, funeral plans, etc., for a loved one, can you maybe just walk us through the costs that arise after someone passes away, and especially, I guess, if they pass away suddenly or unexpectedly?
Absolutely. Well, there's a few components. So the first is kind of funeral and burial plans. So, cremation has gone up a ton in Canada. So now 72%, as of 2018, 72% of folks are cremated versus 48% in 2000. So
Wow. We're
seeing that rate go up a ton. And cremation is typically more affordable than burial. So for cremation, you're looking at typically between about $2,000 to $5,000, whereas for burial, it's, between $5,000 and $10,000. Now, you could have a $1,000 burial. You could probably have a $100,000, you know, celebration of life, depending on what you're looking for. And there are these kind of new direct-to-consumer cremation companies like Irene that are kind of bringing that cost down, similar to, you know, other companies kind of cutting out the middleman and bringing costs down. So, but that's just one component of the cost of passing away is, okay, how do we bury or cremate our loved ones? How do we have a celebration of life that honors them? Then you also have to look at the cost of kind of legal and government fees and the cost of actually wrapping up someone's estate. So that means the executor of the estate paying probate fees, which are typically 1.5% of the estate in Ontario, and they vary across Canada. Then you're usually paying a lawyer or an accountant or both to help with filing the final tax return and navigating closing up the estate, which is super complex. And so it all really, really adds up, from celebrating and honoring someone's life to hiring professionals to navigate the process. And to your point, the less prepared you are, the more expensive it is.
You speak to people a lot who are in the middle of this and dealing with these costs. Why are people so surprised by these costs?
We do anything and everything we can as a society in Canada to avoid thinking about our own mortality.
Right.
And that's because of a couple of reasons. Number one, it's uncomfortable. No one really wants to sit around on a Friday night with a glass of wine talking about death when they could be watching Netflix. But also it's just a, it's not something that we ever learn about, right? I mean, we learn about the a bunch of other things in school. We certainly don't learn about estate planning and the importance of it and the cost of dying. So I think a big reason is, frankly, ignorance. We truly don't know how much it costs to pay for things like funerals. We don't know anything about probate fees or how taxes work when you pass away. So I don't think it's because people are just malicious and want to leave a huge mess and a giant bill for their family. It truly is, we just don't know any better as a society, and we certainly don't prioritize taking the time out to actually learn more about it.
I want to talk through the stages that you mentioned in terms of what we have to do, and maybe let's start with burials, because I understand the cost has been rising. And why is that? And also, I guess I'm just curious because I've seen some stories about this. Burial plots are somewhat like real estate, I guess, in that scarcity drives the price up. How does it work?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I'm in the digital pre-planning business, so I can't speak too much to the, you know, the land ownership side of cemeteries. But what I can say is, so we're partnered with Arbor Memorial, which is the largest funeral home chain in Canada. So I reached out to them and I said, listen, send me the trends, send me the data. They reported that in 1980, the cost of cemetery services alone was $8,000. So the cost to bury someone. And that as of 2010 was $18,000.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of this just goes back to, number one, inflation, right? These costs are just going to go up over time along with everything else. And then I think just objectively, the other reason is scarcity, as you mentioned. Like, you know, there's just not as many places to bury people. And so, you know, with scarcity comes prices going up. And, you know, you can get around some of that by pre-planning. You can break it down into, you know, a payment plan, for example. And often you can lock in, depending on who you're pre-planning with, you can lock in today's price. So if you actually pass away in 10 years, your family would still be able to kind of honor that price that you paid for it 10 years ago. But ultimately, I mean, this is, the costs are only going to go up over time because of scarcity and inflation.
It's so interesting that as I'm having this conversation with you, it feels morbid to me. It feels like I shouldn't be discussing it, like we're focusing on death. And this is exactly what you're talking about, right? Why we don't plan for it, because it just, it feels icky to discuss and think about.
Yeah, I think it's natural. I mean, listen, I have two kids under 3 years old. So my deepest, darkest thoughts are about what happens if I'm not around and I don't get to see them grow up. But there's also this rational part of my brain, especially running an online will company, where it's like, yeah, we're all going to die. You know, conceivably, we all know that. And we know that we should be taking precautions, taking out life insurance policies, sharing our wishes, making sure our family knows about and has access to our crypto or our other assets, and, you know, trying to reduce burden. If I asked you, do you want to burden your kids or your family? The answer is no. But when you actually ask people, okay, well, then what concrete steps have you taken to avoid that, to reduce burden of time and cost and anxiety? The answer is usually, well, I haven't done much, right? Mm-hmm. The stats are pretty clear. Most Canadians don't have wills. Most Canadians don't have life insurance policies. I would argue that out of everyone pre-planning their funeral or cemetery arrangements, it's probably mostly, you know, 65 plus folks, mm-hmm. Which does make sense. They're thinking about it more, but yeah, I get it. It's not the fun thing to think about, but it's kind of like taxes. It's one of those must-dos that in my mind takes this huge burden off. It's when we talk to customers who have just created a will or just done any other aspect of planning, the number one most consistent feedback I hear is, A, it was easier than I thought it would be. I built it up to be this monster task in my mind and it really wasn't. And B, it is this huge weight off their shoulders. It's this peace of mind right. That they've taken this step to protect their family. So yeah, it's uncomfortable. We all avoid it. But when we do it, we feel better about it and we feel empowered. So how do we get people to do it more? I don't know. That's what we try to figure out every single day.
Let's talk about the burden that you've mentioned a few times in very real terms. And again, since most people haven't prepared, what actually happens if someone dies in this country and they don't have a proper will and they haven't made any accommodation for their funeral costs? What practically happens next and who's responsible for whatever costs occur?
Great question. So if you passed away tomorrow and you did not have a will, there's a government formula in each province that dictates who's going to get your assets. It usually starts with a spouse if you have one, then it goes to children if you have them, then parents, siblings, etc. There's a misconception that if you die without a will, the government gets your money. That's only true in the event that you have no living heirs. Otherwise, your assets get split up according to that formula. But right off the bat, there's an issue where the courts have to get involved to appoint an executor. Mm-hmm. It can be a messy process. And that's where right off the bat, you might be incurring some legal fees, you know, that are going to cost you more than if you had had a will that clearly stated who the executor would be. Same with if you have minor children, you might have to get the courts involved to appoint a guardian for them. So you're adding kind of legal and administrative burden right off the bat.
Right.
If you have life insurance, then that can go to paying for funeral and burial costs. Maybe you have it through a work policy. Maybe you have a private life insurance policy. The benefit of that is it's paid out very quickly. You might get life insurance money in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and that can be used to directly pay for a lot of those expenses. If not, it takes typically in Canada 12 to 18 months to settle someone's estate and pay out to beneficiaries, which means that if you die without a life insurance policy or anything set up, you might have to pay out of pocket for those kind of funeral and burial expenses, and you may not be reimbursed for quite a long time. If I passed away tomorrow and I have no life insurance and I don't have a savings account to cover it, there is a government benefit, as long as you've paid into CPP, of $2,500, a one-time death benefit. Right now, they're arguing to raise that because it's been the same for 25 years. And as I just told you, funeral and burial costs have been through the roof, and this benefit has stayed the same, $2,500.
Right.
Well, I don't think you're really going to be able to, you know, cremate your loved one and have a celebration of life for anywhere close to that amount of money. So to your question, well, then who's paying for it? Often family members are having to front this money out of pocket. Yes, it can be reimbursed from the estate when it's settled, but asterisk when it's settled 18 months later. Yes, they can pay for it out of life insurance, but even then, you're not getting that for weeks and you've probably already had to incur those costs. So the short answer is family members are paying for it, or they're taking out loans to pay for it, or they're asking friends to front foot that bill. And if they can't find anyone to, then you have the situation that we have in Newfoundland.
Have you noticed, and I guess you might not be at the front of this, but an increase in the number of people who are right on the edge of not being able to afford that when they need to? I've seen, in the past couple of years, I've seen a couple of crowdfunding efforts to support a celebration of life. And I guess I'm wondering, like, with how tight everything is, are we seeing more people who are in that, maybe not the extreme situation we're talking about in Newfoundland, but are in a situation where they're struggling to honor their loved ones in a way that allows them closure and lets them feel like they're really saying goodbye?
I mean, absolutely. I mentioned that there's a call to increase this death benefit. So it's the Funeral Service Association of Canada that is kind of calling on the government saying $2,500 isn't enough. It's been the same for 25 years. Families cannot honor their loved ones with that amount of money. And in the article I read about, it said over 10% of Canadian seniors are living at or below the poverty line. So, you know, that's the seniors themselves. You might say, well, their family that they're leaving behind might have the money to front it, but in many cases, they don't. So yeah, I think we're seeing an increase in folks who are not able to honor their loved ones the way that they want to, that are having a capital crunch at the time they pass away, and that are ultimately kind of bearing the burden of both lack of planning, but also just lack of resources to do what they would have hoped for. And you're right, you're seeing a lot of, it's like when someone's house burns down, right? You see a GoFundMe, even though they have home insurance, a lot of times there's GoFundMes to replace a lot of the things outside of insurance or to help them out. And you certainly see that when someone passes away, you see a lot of GoFundMes that are about, yes, the education fund for the kids, but also the cost of dying and the cost of wrapping that up, not to mention income replacement if the person who passed away was working.
When we talk about so many people dying unprepared or without their affairs in order, what is the biggest challenge in getting someone, and here I'm not going to talk about someone 65, 70, but, you know, somebody my age, around 40, or even somebody younger, you know, who really, like, let's be honest, hasn't given much thought to it regardless yet?
Well, I already spoke about kind of lack of knowledge, right? Not knowing what you need, not knowing what you don't know.
Right.
I think the biggest practical barriers, I mean, my husband and I started Willful because we wanted to get our own affairs in order. We wanted to get a will when we were in our early 30s, and we got quoted four figures, you know, for a will from a lawyer, even though we had a pretty simple situation. And when we kind of looked into it and started talking to our friends about it, we found the same practical barriers, which was cost. You know, I don't want to pay $1,000 plus for what is a relatively simple document, especially at a point in my life where I don't have a lot of complexity. You know, I'm not Elon Musk. I don't need all of these fancy mechanics. The second barrier is convenience. So the laws around estate planning are super antiquated. Your will has to be printed on paper, signed with wet ink, stored as a physical copy in every province except British Columbia. So you can imagine.
Really?
COVID hits. And then all of a sudden, I don't have a printer at home. I can't get together with witnesses because, you know, of social distancing. So I think that was a big kind of come to Jesus moment where it was like, wow, these laws are so out of date. There's, you know, so much paper involved. It doesn't work, but it's a really traditional industry and it's going to take time. So convenience is the second one, not just convenience of having to have a paper document, but also going into a lawyer's office in the middle of the workday and, you know, working around their schedule. And then accessibility, right? If you think about, like, I live in Prince Edward County, pretty rural community. If you have mobility issues, I think there's just a lot of access to justice issues in general around low-income Canadians, marginalized groups, disabled folks, being able to access legal services just across the board because of cost and convenience. So those are kind of the practical barriers. I mean, it's not true to say that we've been able to solve for all of those by, you know, bringing this process online, because we still have to respect the legal requirements around physical documents. And but I think you're seeing more startups and tech companies try to tackle this problem of access to justice and reduce the barriers so that it's easier for folks to either pre-plan or to deal with settling an estate when the time comes.
What are the easiest ways to mitigate some of these costs that we're discussing? I know maybe there's no perfect shortcut, but the less prepared you are, the more money it costs. So what are the top ways, I guess, to trim some of that by doing things in advance?
So first thing I would do if I'm listening is I would check my work group benefits plan, if I have one, to check on how much life insurance is there. So if I passed away tomorrow, what check is my family getting? It's, you know, can be usually $10,000, $25,000, $50,000, but sometimes a lot more. That gives you the peace of mind right there that, you know, funeral and burial costs could be covered quite easily. Obviously, if you switch jobs or you don't have coverage, then I would be looking at getting life insurance. You can get term life insurance for a pretty affordable monthly rate. And then you know that your family's kind of financially taken care of. They're not having to pay out of pocket. I would obviously, I mean, I'm biased. I run a will company, but I would get a will so that you know, A, your wishes are documented, but also that the legal costs are going to be reduced after you pass because that document lays out everything that you're looking for. And then I would be very clear with your family about what you want from a funeral and burial perspective. For example, if you want to be cremated and not buried, that's cheaper. You can also prepay and pre-plan. I'm going to be honest, I'm 38 years old. Am I going to prepay for my funeral out of pocket when I just told you I have two kids under three that are very expensive? No, I'm not going to. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to make sure that I've shared my wishes. Unfortunately, I do want a very expensive celebration of life that is open bar and at a very cool location. So I will have to plan for that. But I do have the life insurance and the thing set up that would give me confidence that my husband would be able to plan something great. Who knows? I mean, maybe he'll just take that money and spend it on Vegas, but you know, I'll be gone. So we'll see.
Are you going to go for burial or cremation?
I'm a cremation gal. You know, to me, it's very practical.
It's cheaper. You're saving money.
It's cheaper. I want to save my relatives' money, but no, I've always liked the idea of cremation. I don't like the idea of, maybe I just watched too many scary movies, but the idea of, you know, sitting in a box in the ground. Whereas other people feel very strongly about burial, and it takes up less real estate in the world, you know? So one thing I've been thinking about more lately is kind of sustainable burials and cremations, right? Because cremation ultimately is pretty bad for the environment. I mean, you're like,
right,
all of these emissions from burning someone, right?
Whereas if they bury you, you feed the worms.
There you go. So there's a company called Better Place Forest. I think it's actually a Canadian that started it. And they allow you to be buried under one of those big redwoods in California, which I think is kind of cool.
That's cool.
Then there's also this new trend called aquamation, which is basically cremation, but breaking your body down with water instead of with fire. So anyways, I don't know what the cost of those, but I think innovation in the space, whether that's companies helping you pre-plan or handle the settlement process, or some of these more green burial and cremation options, will inevitably provide more competition. And I do think that will be better for the industry at large. It'll drive costs down as a whole.
We mentioned that these are tough conversations to have. I find that if you can joke about it as we're doing, it can become a little easier. That's obviously much easier to do when you're in the middle of your life as opposed to thinking seriously about what's to come. How do people start these conversations with aging parents or loved ones? And, you know, you don't know if they've prepared, you don't know how much money they've put away for it, if any. And it's tough to open a conversation with, like, so you're getting close to the end here. What do we got put away?
Absolutely. And it's hard to bring that up without seeming self-serving. Like, okay, what's my inheritance check going to be here, right?
You want to be cremated, right? You definitely want to be cremated. It's cheaper.
Exactly. No expensive burials for you, Dad. I think the place that we always start, the place I've started with my own family, because listen, you know, I'm that sandwich generation where I'm caring for young kids, but I have aging parents. My husband and I, both of our sets of parents are divorced and remarried. So that's eight aging parents who also know that their daughter or daughter-in-law runs a will company. And so I'm definitely going to be the executor in a lot of wills. Let's just put it that way.
So you need to get a bulk discount.
I know, exactly. So I have a vested interest in making sure, we all have a vested interest in not just making sure mm-hmm. we have our own plans in place so we don't burden the next generation or our siblings or parents, but also so that we know their wishes so that it's easier for us. And so start the conversation with, what do you want your legacy to be? It's such a softer way to open it. Not, what's my inheritance check? Do you want to be buried or cremated? Because that's a little shocking after you asked, you know, hey, do you want to go to Costco on Sunday? But, you know, sit down. Hey, this is really important to me. I want to make sure I'm prepared to honor your wishes in a way that would really respect them. I can't do that if I don't know them. Maybe you haven't thought about this, but I want to plant the seed. How can I honor your legacy? Is that donating to a certain charity? Is that like my grandmother wanting to have her body donated to science so that she could further scientific research and have a positive impact. But ultimately, if you broach it with that, then it becomes easier to get into the logistical questions of, okay, do you have a will?
Right.
Do you have power of attorney documents? Do you have life insurance? Where's all this stuff stored? What about passwords to key accounts? You want me to shut down your Facebook or keep it active? You can get into the nitty gritty of that after you've had the big conversations.
What if they want a funeral and you're like, I am not going to be able to afford that you've got planned there, mom? What if they're like you and they want this amazing celebration of life with an open bar and you're like, I'm just trying to afford a casket here?
Well, number one, Costco does sell caskets. So, you know, you can go the affordable route and buy in bulk, as you were saying earlier. But I heard this story of a set of brothers in Ireland. The dad passed away and he wanted this big Irish celebration of life, tons of open bar and food and drinks. And one of the sons was like, gung-ho, let's do it for dad. And the other son was like, I don't want to do it because it's taking dollars out of my inheritance. So no, we're just going to plan this like really small party, low budget. And so it ended up going to court and the judge ruled that they had to have the big party because that was the dad's wishes and because there was money for it. So all that to say, the best thing you can do is document your wishes, document what you want.
Right.
And you really are responsible for funding it, right? I think expecting that if you pass away penniless, your family's going to throw you a six-figure celebration, like an elaborate wedding, it's not really realistic. So it is, I think the onus is on us as the people who want to be honored in a certain way to set it up so that our family is equipped to honor those wishes in a way that doesn't bankrupt them.
So make sure you get everything in writing, basically, ahead of time, everything.
Ideally, I mean, there's the legal documents like the will, but there's also just, you know, you can record wishes outside of that. And the more you record for your family, the easier it's going to be. I mean, you can get down to, some people are so, I'm anal about it because obviously I run an estate planning company, but I've got a Google Drive doc that has the songs I want played at my funeral, the last social media posts I'd want posted because, you know, with my luck, my last tweet would be about, you know, the latest Fast and the Furious movie. And I'd like something a little more poignant to be up there. So again, I think it can be overwhelming to think about all the things you could do to plan.
Right.
Realistically, there's just a few core things. Make sure there'd be money there when you pass away, either through life insurance or savings or whatever that might be. Get the legal document that's going to make it easier for your family and then share the wishes that you want to make sure are honored. And yes, put it in writing because that wine-fueled conversation you have about this Saturday night is not going to stick with you in 20 years.
Erin, thank you so much for this. And if you do buy caskets in bulk at Costco, you end up on a list somewhere. You definitely do.
Yeah, I'm definitely on some government watch list for the amount that I Google death-related topics.
That's Erin Burry, the co-founder of Willful. It's a digital estate planning app. Thanks to Erin for sharing her expert knowledge with us, and you can find more information about Willful at willful.co. Thanks again to Cheryl for writing in and sharing her story. Can't have been easy. If you have a money problem or just a suggestion for something we should cover, we want to hear from you. You can email us at hello@itepod.ca. You can call us and just talk it out by leaving a voicemail at 416-935-5935. We don't need your real name. We do need your real numbers, both financial and phone. Don't forget to leave a callback number so we can get in touch. Thank you so much for listening. And if you like this show, if you want more of this show, if you want us to succeed and get paid and have jobs in this economy, share this show and tell your friends to listen. You can also like and rate and review and follow and everything your favorite podcast app allows you to do. I'm your host and executive producer, Jordan Heath Rawlings. This episode was written and produced by Allison Broverman and Stephanie Phillips. Sound design was handled by Robin Edgar. Mary Jubrin is our digital editor. Diana Kay is our manager of business development. And together, we make up the Frequency Podcast Network, a division of Rogers. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back with more next week on In This Economy.